Welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of the world's best resource for hockey strength and conditioning information. HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 54 of the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com. I'm your host, Brian Sippets. Today, we are going to be talking to Matt Shaw from the University of Denver. Of course, Denver just won their first national championship since 2005. Matt's been doing an amazing job there of putting together a program with some unique components that's obviously maximizing performance for those players. So we're going to talk to Matt about the pieces of the puzzle that he thinks are most important and what he's using with the Pioneers to keep him healthy and strong through the season. If you haven't checked out the site, make sure to head over to HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com. You can check out articles, programs, webinars, videos, and podcasts all dedicated to the training of hockey players. So we learn from the best of the best. We've got contributions from Matt Shaw and tons of other NCAA and NHL coaches. If you haven't been with us before, you can check it out for just $1 for the first 7 days. After that, it's $14.95 a month. Or if you want to get 2 months for free, you can sign up for the year at just $1.49. So it's a great deal if you work with hockey players, if you're a parent of a hockey player. If you are a very interested hockey player, you can check out all this great training information, make yourself better off the ice as well as on the ice. You can also check us out on Facebook and on Twitter. Twitter feed is probably the most active. We're at joinus at HSC. So check it out. We've got a lot of stuff on Twitter that doesn't make the site. So if you're interested, check out that Twitter feed. Lots of great info there. All right, we're going to get rolling with Matt Shaw, Director of Sports Performance at the University of Denver. All right, today on the Hockey Strength Podcast, we are lucky enough to have the Director of Sports Performance from the University of Denver. Matt Shaw is in his fifth year, and in his fifth year, he's doing great things with the hockey team. Matt, thanks so much for joining us. Hopefully the dust has settled a little there after a big championship win.
Appreciate it, Brian. Thanks. Glad to be on.
So, in catching a couple Pioneers games down the stretch there, just a team with gross skill. I mean, unbelievable skill. It was a lot of fun to watch, and obviously a ton of success, NCAA championship, coach of the year, Hobie Baker winner, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you name it.
Yep.
Yeah. So yep. You name it. Pioneers won it. So definitely you got a chance to work with a pretty gifted team for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely a team that I think it was definitely unique coming in, to this season, because obviously the experience in the Frozen Four last year, obviously a lot of lessons learned. It was the first time that this program has been back to the Frozen Four, I think, since they won in back-to-back years in 04 and 05. But I think that experience, itself was, I think, really what I think helped determine the path and the journey that these guys went through over the course of this year.
Yeah, and obviously the players have turned over since then, but that kind of trip to the Final Four or the Frozen Four tends to shape a program, and it gives, a little bit of a different yardstick, like as to what is a successful year. So that tends to improve the culture of the team, and it looks like that went through to these guys as well.
The one thing that I think that really truly allowed us to do was just become process driven. I think anytime that you have a team that gets to have those types of experiences and they see kind of what that environment's like. One, I think the emotional management side was huge for us. Obviously being there last year with the upperclassmen that we had this year and being able to, I think, teach our younger guys, the guys coming into the program this off season, really was kind of a profound impact. These guys knew how to handle that type of situation, that type of play, single game elimination style hockey. It really created, I think, a process-driven approach behind everything. In fact, that was really the hallmark, I think, of this year and the phrase that was used the entire season probably the most. It was just the process.
Yeah, guys pick up on that too. Like, looking back now, I'm not fully sure I would have understood it, but I think when you live it like that and it's something you talk about every single day, it can definitely be driven home for you. With such a talented group of players, I mean, did you, as a coach, did you have to change anything, this year compared to last year, or did you approach this year any different than you have approached years in the past?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely a little bit differences. I think, you know, we've kind of gotten, you know, our culture within this program set. What I mean by that is obviously, you know, when I first came in 5 years ago, you know, it was a very, very different team under different, you know, coaching staff at the time. So we've obviously transitioned throughout the last few years just in terms of, I think, commitment level, process orientation, which is, like I said, the thing that's probably talked about most, not being result driven, but really it's about the day-to-day, you know, I think the detail that goes into how our guys practice, how they lift, getting the most out of each individual time kind of period throughout the year. But, you know, I think it's kind of an interesting roster. You know, obviously we had a lot of young talent. You know, look at, you know, Nicky Borgstrom coming in as a freshman and what he did this year, you know, first-round draft pick with the Florida Panthers. So he obviously was incredibly talented. Troy Terry, you know, you look at obviously Will Butcher, Dylan Gambrell, you know, the guys that I think really were leading the way in terms of talent. But, you know, the other thing that I think made our team really good was just the fact that, you know, we were very, very well balanced. You know, we have players that come in from the BCHL, the USHL, but then we also have, you know, the NAHL. You know, definitely we have, I think, a group that, you know, were four-year players that were committed to being here, obviously, throughout their entire collegiate careers. And they were more just the gritty players that guys really looked up to in terms of just the effort that they provided in practice and the leadership within the weight room that maybe didn't have the same type of skill set. But what they did was they found a role really within the team. They were the guys that went out that defensively or I think, you know, tactically approached the game, you know, in some ways more consistent than maybe anybody else, just because those were the things that they can control at their highest abilities. You know, but this year, really, when it came to lifting and the process, you know, we've always approached things, I think, from a priority standpoint. What I mean by that is, you know, we know that we don't have the biggest team in the country. A lot of our guys, I think, are more along the lines of anywhere from as small as, you know, 5'7", to kind of our average being probably about 5'9", 5'10", maybe. And then, you know, obviously, we have a couple outliers, guys like Evan Cowley, one of our goalies, and Eric Fear, who are both like 6'5". But, you know, we have a very small team. You know, the one thing that I think we've prioritized because of that is our team speed. So we look developmentally to, I think, get people's relative strength up as high as possible. You know, I care more about somebody's relative force production to their individual mass than probably anything, because in the end of the day, that's going to be one of the biggest determinants later on when we start looking at speed development and force production and obviously into the ice and with skating mechanics. But, you know, those things, I think, were always the biggest priorities, and they have been, you know, in terms of the hallmark of the program in the last 5 years. And then the other piece is just movement. You know, biomechanically, you know, we expect our guys to play fast, practice fast. And part of that, I think, is making sure that guys are consistently in a really good place in terms of movement and mechanics. You know, looking at whatever we can do off ice to enhance, you know, stride and length of stride. And just looking at, you know, I think just keeping guys healthy. You know, I mean, at that point in the year, you have, you know, you're obviously playing, you know, really consistently with really, you know, it's do or die time periods. It's physical games. Guys are grinding at that point of the year. You know, you've been playing since October 1st. So if we can keep our guys healthy and prioritize that at the end of the year and keep guys at really as high as functioning as possible, it gives them the best chance to, I think, be successful in the postseason.
Sure. Yeah, and to touch on your, you know, having sort of smaller overall size across the team, I mean, I think that's you're sort of forced to recruit that way on the small or on the big ice. Playing on the Olympic surface is definitely a, you know, a different monster, and you want to have a team that's going to be successful in that. So, and a lot of times that favors the smaller, quicker guys. So that makes a lot of sense to me. You know, as a former player, I think, and to go back to what you were talking about, keeping guys healthy and everything, I know you're a guy who has been known as, I see you as a coach that's always willing to go out and learn new things, but not with the intention of taking all of it and making it gospel, like right off the bat. So I think you've done an amazing job of going out, learning a couple techniques, taking it home, digesting it, playing with it a little bit, finding out what helps your players the most, and then being able to implement that in a way that
that makes sense and that keeps your guys healthy throughout the season. So I know, you know, I've seen you present on functional range conditioning. I've seen there was somebody had posted on Twitter before the championship game, the players are doing a glute reset from the reflexive performance reset, and a guy sort of said that they were getting their jaws ready for the game or whatever. So it was funny to me. But, you know, I think you've done an awesome job of taking bits and pieces and sort of weaving it together in a way that obviously your players are performing at their highest level. So talk about some of those bits and pieces, especially the FRC and the RPR that you're using with your players.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one thing from a priority standpoint that we've really tried to do is look at, I think, all the different strategies that are out there. We've looked at not just the strength conditioning and sports performance world, but it's also looking at, you know, chiropractic viewpoints and strategies, physical therapy, you know, FRC, RPR, you know, the Grant Institute's, you know, 3D mapping. I think that there's so many, you know, great, you know, strategies out there, but I think, you know, for us, it's about simplifying those strategies down and not just relying on one, but utilizing multiple strategies to create a process. You know, each one of those, you know, particular, I think, philosophies and viewpoints and methods really, I think, hones in on, you know, one particular aspect of performance. You know, we try to look at things as holistically as possible. So RPR, obviously attacking, you know, parasympathetic responses within the body. Obviously you can, you know, make alterations in terms of how things are neuromuscularly sequencing. You know, 3D mapping, a great assessment tool from a biomechanic, you know, kinetic chain method. And then you have, you know, FRC, which looks at, I think, you know, for us, it's a strategy that we use at consistently maintaining range of motion. So when we get into season, you know, we'll use FRC early off season and in season to, I think it's just for us about maintaining, you know, really control and, you know, active control over joint range of motion, at the end point, you know. So, you know, if you have somebody who's obviously in season and they're consistently moving, you know, throughout a particular motor pattern, like skating, you know, day in and day out, eventually your body starts to respond to those particular joint ranges of motion. And you can get a loss, I think, of motor control at, you know, extreme end range. So it's a warm-up strategy that we can use, obviously, at a lesser intensity scale in terms of conscious contraction in season than maybe what we would do in early off-season or out-of-season. But we try to use things like CARS, which are controlled articular rotations, that really is just moving at your end range all the way through 360 degrees of joint control. And running really maximum contraction at that point to teach, you know, not only motor control and nervous system function, but it actually ends up opening up, I think, more active control. Mm-hmm. And for us, if we can eliminate that discrepancy between active and passive range of motion, then, you know, one, we know that our players can handle, you know, more force that they may see on the ice in those kind of abstract positions. And so I think it better prepares our athletes to handle the abnormal and the kind of the situations and context that they may see in performance. But then the other thing, too, is that, you know, it's in season, it's a great way just to maintain. We don't obviously do it 100% in terms of the contraction, but we can still run a smaller contraction and just try to maintain those end ranges and just make sure that over the course of an entire season that for us obviously runs in the college environment from October 1st through mid-April, that it allows us, I think, just make sure that week in, week out, month to month, that things aren't getting reduced. You know, RPR for us has been massive. You know, we've started to implement RPR from a weekly perspective in terms of team warm-ups, usually at least twice a week, and then we always do it on game days. And then I treat our guys, you know, everywhere. I think almost before every game, we'll go through kind of just a quick pelvic check. So we basically will test the psoas, the glute, we'll test the hamstring, adductors and abductors, and just make sure that the entire pelvic complex is fully on and there's no pseudopresis going on. You know, and so if we can go through and run through that check, I think it just, for us, it helps set people up for success. You know, going into a game and somebody knows that, you know, something just doesn't feel quite right, generally it's like our athletes to get really aware of those things early on. You know, we've definitely taken, I think, a more intrinsic approach behind coaching and getting guys to understand their body first, especially early on as a freshman, versus extrinsic coaching all the time. And then actually as they go, we actually then start to prioritize extrinsic and more motivational-based coaching because of that. You know, I want our guys to be aware of those things because then they can communicate to us or the sports medicine staff and we can make an adjustment as needed.
Sure. So when you're doing the testing, are you personally testing the team, or are you teaching them to do their own, or do even like a partner situation?
Yeah. So throughout the week, we'll go through just normal, kind of like the full warm-up sequence. They'll spend 20 to 30 seconds just kind of hitting all the different points. So they'll run through, obviously, the diaphragm points, back of the jaw, run the glute, and then they'll hit, obviously, everything, you know, this is like a consistent way to make sure they're really, I think, just taking a broad scope shotgun approach to it. Mm-hmm. But then we'll manually test almost every guy before games. So we run through manual muscle testing, and it's pretty easy to tell. I think, you know, if somebody's on, you know, it's not a shaky response. It's a strong, immediate connection the minute that you're pushing down. And, you know, it doesn't take much pressure. You're talking about 20 pounds of actual, you know, poundage that you're really trying to apply, and it's just how fast that person engages in. And so those things allow us, you know, we can rip through the team, and the nice thing is I have a staff that, you know, is entirely certified. So three full-time staff members here are all certified in RPR, and then I've got two part-time positions that are also certified in RPR. And then this summer we'll actually have the rest of sports medicine get certified as well. So we're actually hosting an RPR cert here actually the day after the NSCA hockey conference.
Okay.
So it's definitely something that I think the university, we made sure that when we started implementing it, we had those discussions up front about this type of methodology, and, you know, we had it like individually really looked at from one of our sports med you know, staff members as well as a chiropractor to kind of just take a look at it, you know, make sure that they were confident that, you know, wasn't going to be, you know, an issue in terms of scope of practice, or at least that they were going to be comfortable with us doing it, just because it is basic muscle testing and neurolymphatic / applied kinesiology work. You know, but the nice thing is that we got that support up front. You know, we didn't go out, get certified, and then bring it back and start working on our athletes. You know, we made sure that there was a process behind what we were doing and covering our bases and getting them to support it as well. And they've done an unbelievable job supporting us along the way. We already have one athletic trainer who's certified in RPR, and she actually came out and got certified with us as a staff. That way there was still somebody in sports med that could kind of represent that staff, and I think have a firm understanding of everything. And we've done presentations to the sports med staff to also just make sure that everyone understands how it's going to be applied back in. But I think it for us is just, you know, the more that we can do proactively to set people up for success and try to reduce injury, especially soft tissue and non-contact based issues, you know, I think that just goes such a far way. It's always been one of our biggest priorities, just making sure that kids are in practice, you know, they're competing consistently, you know, looking at things like, you know, man game lost, you know, statistics, and, you know, we try to kind of keep track and eye on, you know, why people aren't practicing or aren't competing, and seeing how we can make the biggest benefit and change.
Man, that's cool that you have such a, you know, global support for it. And I agree with you. I think it is very close to, you know, toeing the line of scope of practice. But I think it is kind of like magic in a way. It's almost closer to the applied kinesiology side than it is to the strength side, the strength coach side, or the even though you're calling it strength testing, I think it's pretty creative terminology to bring it within our scope of practice. But I think that's cool that you have the entire staff that's certified and able to apply those techniques. If you're listening and you're unfamiliar with the RPR, I did an episode with Cal. Cal Dietz at Minnesota is sort of one of the three guys that's rolling out that certification. So if you're listening and you're unfamiliar with the RPR, check out like 6 or 7 episodes ago, maybe the interview with Cal Dietz, and we talk a lot more about it. But so I guess one more question for you, Matt. You know, you're on a time crunch for sure. Your time is limited during the season. As you're prioritizing things, how do you prioritize and find time? I know RPR is a fairly quick thing. I mean, you can run through that in just a couple of minutes, but and it is turning out to be an essential part of a lot of people's programs. But, you know, how do you program? I mean, FRC is I think, highly mindful. And it's almost like you need to take a break and make sure that, you know, the focus is there with the guys. And a lot of that is on them. But talk about your how you prioritize in season and how you get everything in such a tight time frame.
Yeah. I mean, in the end of the day, I mean, no matter what you're applying in, you know, I think it's just about keeping the strategies as simple and as effective as possible. I mean, the one thing that we do with FRC was, you know, we try to apply it from a car's perspective and then maybe use a little bit of Pails Rails, but we didn't take like an absolute approach. The one thing I think that people kind of get hung up on, they learn a new strategy and then like that strategy becomes literally 80% of what they're doing. We've tried to look at every strategy that we're implementing and apply it back in, I think, where it can be the most effective. You know, we can obviously use, you know, a higher degree of scope of practice behind a particular strategy, depending on maybe an individual situation or when the situation or context really determines, you know, that type of situation. But for the most part, it's like, you know, when we're in the college environment, we're constantly working with large teams. I'm not in a situation where I'm working with groups of 4 to 5. Usually when the team's in, you know, we're rolling full team at 28. So I've got to be able to apply things back and effectively for a pretty large group of people. I've got to make sure there's enough coaches on the floor that understand the process and how to coach it effectively and to be, I think, mindful of the details of how things get applied back in. But from year to year, I think, you know, this was a progression. You know, we started out with just, you know, really, I think, getting back at the cultural side of things, the mentality of our athletes, you know, the professionalism day to day. And then outward from that, you know, once that was really, I think, the foundation to how we operated as a team and as a program, it was adding in, I think, unique strategies. We definitely started applying other strategies in. And, you know, when I went out to learn those strategies, it was more about, well, you know, what's one thing that I can add in, you know, whether it was 3D mapping and bringing, you know, a different level of assessment and eval to the team. That was 1 year. FRC was another year. RPR was a different year. You know, we've never tried to, I think, apply, you know, all these strategies in at the exact same time. It's just way too much learning. But it's been a progression. And for us, you know, like I said, it goes back to just the process and making small little incremental steps to get the program to where, you know, we wanted it. But each one of those strategies, I think, for us was huge because it allowed us to, I think, just change one thing or bring one more strategy in that could help us resolve a bigger, you know, question or a bigger kind of scope that we wanted to hit within our training environment.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately for you, the training is the biggest piece still. Strength training, like you said, you're looking for that relative force production from your guys. So yep. That's still going to be the biggest piece, but those, I feel like you're just getting those extra 1% of the marginal gains from these extra techniques. And like I said, I think you've probably done it better than anyone where you go out and learn a little bit about a lot and figure out what's going to be the most effective for your players and in your environment. So, congrats on that and keep up the good work and congrats to your guys on a big championship this year.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks, Brian.
All right. So hopefully we'll hear more from Matt Shaw as we get going. Matt, this is your maybe second or third time on the podcast here, but always appreciate your expertise, and I think you're definitely leading the field here in terms of, you know, education and applying it to hockey players. So we appreciate it. And Matt, take care and good luck with the rest of your teams this season.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, that's going to do it for episode 54 of the Hockey Strength Podcast. Thanks so much to Matt Shaw for joining us. Remember, check us out on Twitter and Facebook. We've got a lot of cool information heading out there. If you're not a member of the site, be sure to check us out. We've got a ton of great information for the training of your hockey players. So that's all for today. Until next time, guys, be sure to train smart and check out hockeystrengthandconditioning.com, the world's best resource for training hockey players. Take care, and we'll talk to you soon.